This is The State of Things. I'm Isaac Davey Aronson, in for Frank Stacio. If you're heading to see the highly anticipated summer movie Cowboys and Aliens opening this weekend, you're in store for fiery intergalactic battles, a passionate on-screen romance, and lots of lines delivered with John Wayne-style machismo like this.
What is that thing?
Why are you asking me?
That you've shot it.
I can't wait. Starring alongside Harrison Ford and Daniel Craig in this Western meets extraterrestrial invasion flick is steampunk. Steampunk is a subgenre of science fiction that's popping up in all kinds of mainstream entertainment. It's easy to spot Victorian-era fashions and culture emerge with ultra-modern technology to create a retro-futuristic fantasy world. With the help of films like Cowboys and Aliens and 2009's Sherlock Holmes, the steampunk movement, if that's what you call it, is growing. It even has a Bible, thanks to one of my guests on the program this hour. Jeff Vandermeer is co-author of the newly published The Steampunk Bible, an illustrated guide to the world of imaginary airships, corsets, goggles, mad scientists, and strange literature. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And Jeff's wife, Anne Vandermeer, is also with us. She's also an author and, together with Jeff, co-editor of a new collection of steampunk short stories called The Thackeray T. Lambshead Cabinet of Curiosities, Images and Stories from Top Authors and Artists. Anne, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And one of the top authors featured in that book joins me in the studio. Durham-based sci-fi writer Myrrh Lafferty is with us. Myrrh, welcome back to The State of Things.
Thanks for having me.
And this weekend, Jeff, Anne, and Myrrh will be on hand to talk about their latest works and the ever-evolving world of science fiction at the Cabinet of Curiosities Literary Extravaganza. That's at Full Steam Brewery in Durham this Saturday. Jeff, since you wrote the Bible on steampunk, let me start with you. Did I get anywhere close to doing a good job of defining what steampunk is?
You did a great job. It is retrofuturism, influenced by the fiction of like H.G. Wells and Jules Verne. It's influenced heavily by the Victorian era, and in particular the Industrial Revolution. So there's a lot of antiquated technology in it, like airships, which may actually be making a comeback because they're actually ecologically friendlier for the environment than planes. Mad scientists tend to make a lot of appearances, and the general aesthetic is kind of the opposite of the seamless design that we're used to from like Apple and iPhones and things like that. The idea being to make functional objects that are also beautiful to look at.
Well, steampunk's experiencing a resurgence in popularity, but it actually has a long history in our literary and entertainment culture. I mean, what were some of the earliest steampunk appearances in books, television, and movies?
Well, I think the Wild Wild West TV program, with all the gadgets and the inventions, and again this idea of kind of the half-crazed scientist who may or may not be working for the right side, that TV show is definitely an example and kind of a cult classic of early steampunk. When it comes to the fiction, a guy named K.W. Jader, who wrote The Infernal Devices, which has just been reissued, coined the term in 1987, and then William Gibson and Bruce Sterling wrote The Difference Engine in 1991, which was probably the high water mark for the fiction, until it came back through fashion and movies and music and all that, and then that led to a resurgence in the fiction.
And does the fact that steampunk's rooted in historical Victorian-era culture allow more people to connect with it, you think, more so than perhaps sci-fi that's strictly set in the future or another less familiar universe?
I think there definitely is an appeal. I mean, you see a lot of couples getting involved in steampunk. The fact that it's so diverse in the sense of you can come into it from an art standpoint or a tinker standpoint, or you can come into it from the fashion, the fiction. I mean, there's lots of different entry points, and that's why it's so healthy right now, is that as one trend dies out, something else comes in to take its place.
Anne Vandermeer, I'd like to talk a little bit about the Cabinet of Curiosities, which centers on the character of Dr. Thackeray T. Lambshead. Who is he?
He is this wonderful doctor, this character that was born in 1900 in England and traveled all around the world collecting these eccentric diseases, which he put together in an anthology that came out in 2003. And that book was called The Thackeray T. Lambshead Pocket Guide to Eccentric and Discredited Diseases. Even though it was called a pocket guide, it was several hundred pages long.
That's a big pocket.
Yes.
And where did the impetus for the Cabinet of Curiosities come from?
Well, it's interesting where that came from. My husband has a friend who goes by the moniker of the Mad Quail. And one day he sent an email to Jeff, said, "I think I have mad quail's disease." And of course, my husband, being the creative writer that he is, automatically had this idea of, wow, what a great disease. I could give it all kinds of symptoms, and I could do this, and I could do that. And before you knew it, he was wanting to have everybody else join him and create all these strange diseases. And that's what he did, and then it became this wonderful book.
And so
when things
start
with Jeff, they just kind of expand.
And so once we did that, then we thought, well, what do we do next? And it seemed to make sense to that he might have a cabinet of curiosities from all of his travels. And we were really interested in kind of the secret life of objects
mm-hmm.
and the connections that people have to objects. And it also seemed like it could be a great art book because we could work with artists and authors and put them together and sometimes have stories that were inspired by art we had already acquired for the book and vice versa. And so it became this very synergistic process and more than just a fiction anthology, but kind of a great art book, too.
Now, Murr, you're a contributing author to the Cabinet of Curiosities collection. Now, you say your story is not steampunk, but can you tell us about it and where it fits into the world of Thackeray Lamshead?
Well, my story is about a reporter who goes to interview Dr. Lamshead in 1963, and while she is all ready to go, she actually gets served some cream that gives her violent food poisoning, which gets Dr. Lamshead started on a complete tangent of how Louis Pasteur was full of crap, didn't know anything, and how there were at least 14 strains of bacteria that could get through the patented S-shaped flask that Pasteur had created. And so to prove it, he takes the reporter to the Cabinet of Curiosities to show his flask that he created.
I would love it if you would just read a bit of your story there where Dr. Lamshead takes the reporter down to the Cabinet of Curiosities.
Sure. There was indeed no light, but the basement was oddly dry and warm, something you didn't really see in an underground English room made of stone. The dim daylight that dared follow us into the basement tentatively touched a couple of shelves, and I gasped. The doctor had taken me into his cabinet, and I could see almost nothing. I could make out a large table in the corner with a single chair, both table and chair covered with various books and maps, and I think a taxidermied three-legged platypus. One shelf had stuffed tropical birds, although I could swear I saw one move, but it was dark. I tried to make out what was in some glass globes that looked like they were full of mist and fireflies. Lamshead rummaged in a corner, murmuring to himself. I could make out, if he'd just held out 5 years, we could have done so much together, but he died a moron. I later checked on this. Lamshead was born in 1900, and Pasteur died in 1895. I knew Lamshead was a child prodigy, but what he thought a 78-year-old man would have learned from a newborn, I did not ask. I reached out my finger to touch what looked like a finely crafted wooden horse, but then pulled back. Something had shifted, almost imperceptibly, inside. An ancient spear sat propped in the corner opposite the door. It was filthy, still bloody from the poor victim that had been pierced last. I shook my head. On the floor next to the spear lay at least 20 pots, most of them closed, but one on its side, shattered, with dust spilling out everywhere. Something that looked like a bouquet of dried scorpions stood up from another urn, and I decided I would not try to touch anything else. Then Lamshead made an aha sound, and I heard a crash as he tried to extricate something from a pile. He looked down at the floor and frowned. He said, "That was unfortunate. I should get Paulette to clean that up before it spreads." And then he took my arm. I followed him, reluctantly, out to the sunny afternoon and watched as he closed the door.
And we won't spoil the surprise of what it is that Dr. Lamshead shows us. That's Durham author Murr Lafferty reading from her short story, The Argument Against Louis Pasteur. That story is found in the Thackeray T. Lamshead Cabinet of Curiosities anthology, edited by my other guests, Anne and Jeff Vandermeer. Murr, it sounds to me like that Thackeray Lamshead must just be such a fun source to just let your imagination run wild with what he might have in his possession.
Well, you have no idea. My husband gave me the Discredited Diseases book back in 2003, and it was one of my favorite books. So when I got a chance to write for this anthology, it was something I just had to grab. It was fantastic. And, you know, Lamshead has his history that was created was just it was just so much fun to look in and then be able to play in myself.
Jeff, as you mentioned, there are images included and art included in the Cabinet of Curiosities collection. Can you describe one or two of your favorites for us?
Yeah, well, one thing I really liked was the fact that when we contacted Mike Mignola for four original pieces, he's the guy who did the Hellboy comics and which were, you know, then turned into movies, is that he was so excited about the opportunity because there were several writers that he'd wanted to work with, like Sherry Priest and Michael Moorcock. So he was like, you know, I'll be in if you can get these writers to do it. And of course, they were thrilled to get to the to have Mike Mignola to riff off of. So that was one thing that was really, really cool, is having that kind of synergy. The other was that we got to put pieces from our own personal collection in, like from the noted Czech animator Jan Senkmeyer, who's pretty much internationally known. We picked up a piece of his while in Prague, and he was nice enough to let us use this in the book. There's another guy named J.K. Potter, a really great kind of horror photographer, and he sent us a photograph of all these weird shelves of objects. And we asked him, well, how did you Photoshop this all together? And he said, no, this is just one of the shelves in my house. So there's a lot of great art in there for that reason.
Well, and speaking of the art, I want to go back to the steampunk Bible for a moment, just to make sure that we get a good idea of what steampunk is. If you could describe also there a couple of the things that are in there. I mean, one of the things I'm thinking of from the steampunk Bible, for instance, is there's this beautiful mechanical elephant. Can you describe that?
Yes, there's an elephant from the Isle of Machines in Nantes, France, that is literally the physical manifestation of a creation in one of Jules Verne's novels. And let me tell you, when you are in this city and you are walking on the sidewalk and you do not know there's a huge mechanical elephant in the city, and you suddenly see a huge mechanical elephant lumbering along, it's quite an experience. But basically, you know, it's funny because steampunk is retrofuturism, so to take something from Verne and make it real is kind of like an exemplification of that. And that's what I love, too, is there's all these huge concept ideas in steampunk. There's also a park in Wisconsin called Forevertron, built by this engineer who, when he retired, took all these, basically these scraps from the history of 20th century technology to build this whimsical kind of Victorian telescope and park.
Anne Vandermeer, I'm wondering what it is about steampunk where you look at these images of Victorian era an aesthetic and then these contraptions, and there is something about it that almost seems more futuristic than something that we dream up right now for the 22nd or 23rd centuries. What is that?
Well, I think what the appeal is of people taking a look at the art and the beauty of the Victorian era is that it is very beautiful to look at. It's very ornamental. When you look at the designs that we have now, everything is modern and sleek and smooth and no rough edges, but being able to incorporate some of those design aesthetics from the Victorian era is very appealing. One of the other things that draw people to steampunk, it's the idea that you can create something yourself, that you can actually make something with your own two hands and say, hey, look what I did. And so when you go back to the Victorian era, you had a lot of people that were actually creating and inventing things on their own, and they didn't just have to be mad scientists. They could just be everyday people that were, you know, sewing their clothing or, you know, doing things like that, building machines that they understood. And I think today, in today's modern world, we're so removed from the act of creation that we want to get back to that, and I think that that's one of the appeals of steampunk.
Murr, I'm wondering what you've observed about how the audience for science fiction has evolved in recent years. I don't even know if it is fair to call something like steampunk a science fiction. I don't know how you feel about that. But are subgenres like steampunk drawing more people in, do you think?
Well, definitely. I mean, I think steampunk, the whole science fiction versus fantasy, you know, that debate is old and still ongoing. But it's... I think that movies have definitely brought more people in. But one thing that's funny is there's a lot of books that are technically science fiction and fantasy, but since they're literary, people don't think about them. For example, A Christmas Carol is a horror tale. It's a ghost story.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine, author Karen Warren, was telling me that somebody was telling her about a science fiction book she was reading. And Karen said, well, that's science fiction. And she was like, no, it's not, as if, you know, she had said something rude. So I think a lot more people are reading, but they may not actually admit it.
Well, Jeff, before you head to Durham, you and Anne are wrapping up a summer writing workshop for kids in South Carolina. I mean, are you teaching them how to write sci-fi and fantasy fiction?
Well, I think that the fact is that for a lot of teens, their entry point into reading is science fiction and fantasy. And so, you know, it's called Shared World Science Fiction Fantasy Teen Writing Camp. We do it every year, the last 2 weeks of July. They get great guest writers who come in, like Ekaterina Sedilla, my wife Anne, who are also going to be obviously at the event in Raleigh-Durham. And 50 kids, basically, 40 to 50 kids come out and just create amazing stories. They build their own worlds. And you know, so it's a creative writing camp. It's also just a total immersive experience. They get so many different things out of it that, yes, it's about science fiction fantasy writing, but, you know, they can use the skills that they learn there for many different things, and they can go in other forms of writing too. So,
and Anne, in our last minute here, can you tell us a little bit about the Cabinet of Curiosities extravaganza planned for this Saturday in Durham?
Well, first of all, I can just tell you it's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be music. There's going to be people in costume. There's going to be readings. There's going to be anecdotes. We're going to tell funny stories, and it's just going to be a great time for everybody.
Well, I want to thank all of my guests for joining us today. Myra Lafferty is a Durham-based author. She's also editor of the Escape Pod podcast series. You can visit her online at murverse.com, M-U-R-verse.com. Authors Anne and Jeff Vandermeer are co-editors of the Thackeray T. Lambshead Cabinet of Curiosities. Jeff's also co-author of The Steampunk Bible. Their website is jeffvandermeer.com. And you can see Myr, Anne, and Jeff this Saturday at the Cabinet of Curiosities Extravaganza at Full Steam Brewery in Durham. The event kicks off at 6 p.m. It's sponsored by Bull Spec Magazine. More information is at bullspec.com. Thanks to all of you for being with us today.
Thanks for having
us.
Thank you.
Thanks. It's always fun.
That's the state of things for today. Thanks for listening. If you have a comment about our show or want to hear archived editions of past programs, go to our website at stateofthings.org. There you can also find a calendar of events mentioned on this show. The State of Things is produced by Amber Nimux and Alex Granados. Robin Copley is the technical director. The managing editor is Lindsay Foster Thomas. Susan Davis is the senior producer. I'm Isaac Davy Aronson, in for Frank Stacio. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.